This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Mokhtar and Wong Xiaoning. In half an hour, we have The Breakfast Grill. Who's in the hot seat today, Xiaoning?
Ooh, upcoming IPO that's going to be listed on the ACE market on the 26th of July. And is targeting to raise 31 million ringgit as a result. So this mysterious company is actually called U-Medic. Now, they are involved in the distribution of various branded medical devices and medical consumables, and also in developing, manufacturing and marketing of these consumables. Philip C is going to be talking to their CEO, Lim Tao Siong. And I think, of course, he's going to ask about their outlook and demand for healthcare products and the group's expansion plans.
I think medical businesses are probably in high demand in this post-pandemic era. It'll be interesting to see if they, what their plans are for the future. So stay tuned to that conversation after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. In the meantime, we're turning our attention to economic matters. We've seen Sri Lanka fall into a deep and unprecedented economic crisis that sparked huge protests. Well, we've seen its president quit after fleeing the country. They've just appointed a new president that's supposed to bring them out of the quagmire they're in. Now, this scenario could be replicated elsewhere, with the IMF warning that other countries could be at risk of similar troubles due to high debt levels and limited policy space.
Yeah, so the IMF managing director said that nations like Pakistan, Bangladesh, Maldives and Laos are on the trajectory to experience a similar fate as Sri Lanka. This largely stems from macroeconomic conditions like rising inflation and interest rate hikes, as well as depreciating currencies. Now, the countries in question, meanwhile, are experiencing, of course, themselves high levels of debt and dwindling foreign currency reserves, just like what we saw in Sri Lanka. So how concerning is this, and what will be the contagion effects to the global economy should we see more countries face Sri Lanka's fate?
So for a better understanding on all the various factors at play, we have on the line with us Professor Hans Genberg, Professor of Economics at the Asia School of Business. Hans, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. So can we get your reactions and I guess your impressions of the IMF warning for countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh, Maldives and Laos? How concerning is this to you?
Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show. Yes, the situation in Sri Lanka is indeed a crisis. The government has defaulted on some of its external debt. The central bank has run out of international reserves, so the country is unable to pay for imports of fuel and other necessities, and inflation is rampant. But for the other countries you mentioned, the situation is not as dire, even if the IMF is warning that they're on a worrying trajectory. Because one role of the IMF is to point out to countries that they may be on the road to economic difficulties unless they carry out corrective policies. So this is an attempt of the IMF to tell the policymakers, to influence the policymakers in their member countries and in the countries you mentioned in particular. But nevertheless, it is true that all four of them were hit significantly by the COVID pandemic and subsequently by the war in the Ukraine. And for example, the Maldives and Laos are both heavily tourist dependent. And when tourist arrivals stopped, export revenues declined, GDP declined, and the countries took a big hit in that sense. And for Pakistan and Bangladesh, it's a similar scenario related to COVID, except this time it's the inward remittances of their workers that are working abroad. And these remittances are extremely important for their economies. And they also dried up due to the pandemic with very negative effect on the economy, as you mentioned. And I should also mention that in all four countries, the governments tried to use fiscal policies to dampen the effect of the economic slowdown. And that led to deteriorating budget situation and increased government debt. And that is what is worrying the IMF. So to answer your question, yes, the four countries you mentioned are facing difficulties, but I would not say it's as severe by a long shot as those difficulties that Sri Lanka is mentioning.
Okay, Hans, how much of these issues that these four countries are facing are due to, you know, things which are not within their control, let's say for COVID-19, but more due to poor economic policies, or is it due to macroeconomic conditions out of the government's control?
Well, so when you have countries facing these difficulties of increasing debt, budget deficits, and so on, more often than not, it's an indicator of economic policies of the government in power. So, to some extent, it's the difficulties are due to government errors. But in the present circumstances, the external factors such as the COVID pandemic and the aggression of Russia against Ukraine, with the effects on energy and food prices, are, I think, dominant. But even here, the policy responses of the individual countries are important, and in particular, the policy responses in sort of normal times, because you have to conduct policies in normal time in such a way that you have space to engage in supporting policies when you have external effects happening to the countries. And if you don't do that, then when the external effect hits, then you are much more vulnerable than other economies that have managed their affairs better.
And I want to get your thoughts on, I suppose, one of the controversial narratives out there. Some experts have blamed China for lending, encouraging and supporting expensive infrastructures to some of these countries, which is said to have caused their debt levels to rise significantly. I mean, is this a valid argument?
Well, let me first of all just emphasize that infrastructure investments are clearly very important for economic growth and prosperity. So that is as a background is important. But these infrastructure investments have to be adapted to the needs of the country in question in order to be beneficial. And they shouldn't just be undertaken simply because cheap financing is available or because a foreign country may want to invest in the country. Because financing, even if it's cheap, it still must be serviced, which means that infrastructure investment must generate enough profits and return in order to be advisable. Because when it comes to government-sanctioned infrastructure, the same principle applies. The government should not accept to undertake foreign finance investment unless it can be shown to have a return at least as high as the cost of finance. So the case in point here, as you mentioned, is where this principle was not applied was the so-called Hambantota Port Development Project in Sri Lanka, which was financed by Chinese funds. It was, of course, undertaken and agreed on by the Sri Lankan government at the time. But it turned out to be so onerous, the debt, that they had to hand over the port and 1,500 acres or 15,000 acres of land to the Chinese sort of creditors. Mm. So China got a lease of a port and a piece of land in a strategic location in exchange for partial debt forgiveness. And this is a great deal for China, but a bad deal for Sri Lanka. So, you know, it takes two to tango. It's this port project was not imposed on Sri Lanka, but of course there are rumors that there were various sorts of corruption associated with it on the part of the Chinese, on the part of the Sri Lankan government, which muddles the picture even worse.
Hans, I want to bring back the conversation to the four countries that we talked about. And there are some common issues that they face, you know, high public debt and also rising inflation. So what kind of remedial actions can these countries take actually to prevent themselves from slipping into the situation that we see in Sri Lanka?
Well, you know, the situation they are facing, they don't have much room to solve the problems without some form of austerity. When Sri Lanka faced these issues some years ago, what they did was to reduce taxes in the hope that would generate in growth, which would restart the economy. That, of course, didn't happen. Instead, reducing taxes reduced government spending and led to an even further increase in debt. So policies have to be sensible. They have to be traditional policies of of some sort of austerity if your government debt is expanding in an uncontrolled fashion. Unfortunately, when in present circumstances where, for example, inflation is to a large extent due to external sources, there again isn't a whole lot that the government can do. They do have to try to raise interest rate, maybe intervene in the foreign exchange market to some extent in order to prevent their currencies from depreciating even further, because depreciating currencies lead to increases of prices of imported goods. So I would say traditional economic policies of restrictive, somewhat restrictive monetary and fiscal policies are needed, even though that is going to be a burden, of course, on society. But there isn't any other way. There's no silver bullet that countries can rely on in this context.
All right. Thank you very much for your time this morning. That was Professor Hans Genberg, Professor of Economics at the Asia School of Business, talking to us about the conditions in which emerging market economies could find themselves at risk of falling into a similar scenario as Sri Lanka, really emphasizing that there are no silver bullets. It's going to be a long, arduous path out of any difficulties that they're in.
Yeah, so mainly it's going to be about austerity measures, going back to traditional economic solutions. It's not an easy path ahead for them because all of them share certain things in common, one of which is extremely high inflation rates, above 20%, for example, and public debt above easily 80, 90%. So not something that can be solved overnight at all.
7:47 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, how complicated is it to open an F&B business in Malaysia? Short answer, very. We delve into the longer answer after the break. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.